Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Werkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And we are back here to talk all about the second week of the New York Film Festival. If you didn't hear our episode last week, we talked about some of the premieres from the first week. So The Seed of the Sacred Fig, Maria, Nickel Boys, Emilia Perez, The Brutalist. So we touched on some of those. If you haven't listened to those or you want to listen to that episode, today we'll be getting into most of everything else that they screened at the festival. I had some really high highs and some really low lows, but I think that's what you get when you're seeing, I saw 25 movies in the past couple weeks. So it was a crazy experience, and there's really nothing like it going to a film festival, especially where you live. So it was a great time. What did you think of week two generally?
I've had a great time at New York Film Festival, as always. It is just so much fun being up at Lincoln Center and getting to experience Q&As, just seeing movies in Alice Tully Hall or the Walter Reed. There is just an electric energy and an excitement around the city at that time. The festival is a longer one. It's 18 days, and that's not including the week of press screenings before it starts. So it feels like we've been doing this for so long right now, and it's bittersweet, I think, that it's come to a close. But overall, I think week two was filled with some of my favorite movies from the festival that we'll talk about. And we're also going to be reviewing Anora, because when this episode comes out, that will be out in select theaters, and they'll also be expanding. So definitely go check that one out in your area. We really loved that film, and we'll get into it a bit later. But yeah, I think overall week two was really strong. I am excited to talk about a number of these, and I know we also disagree on some, so that's always fun. And this is also, I think, like last week, going to include some movies that I think have varying degrees of awards potential that we might be talking about for the rest of the season or just through the months of critics' prizes.
Yeah, so I think just jumping right into movies that we both saw, and I'm curious if we agree on all of these. We also haven't talked about all of them offline, but yeah, so let's get started with Hard Truths, The Room Next Door, and Queer. I think I was, especially from past film festivals, excited for all of these, whether they had good or bad reviews. I was looking forward to performances and visuals. These are artists that we know really well through their filmographies. And I think with Hard Truths, maybe Mike Leigh isn't my director, but he is definitely more of one of yours and Bennett's. I know Bennett loves Mike Leigh. And this one I loved from start to finish, especially Marianne Jean-Baptiste's performance. She really just steals the show, and everything she says and does is either so funny or so emotional that you just immediately and totally understand who she is. And it's a difficult performance, but I enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I love Mike Leigh films. This was one I was really excited for. And I think some of the concern around the movie was stemming from, one, the fact that Bleecker Street picked it up, and we saw that as sort of a death knell for the film's awards chances, considering how it went for Mass a couple of years ago and some of the other titles that they've had. But also, I think there were rumblings that Venice and Cannes passed on this movie. It was also just odd, I think, that its world premiere was at Toronto, when it felt like it could have played really well at Telluride or at Cannes, for instance. But all of that aside, Mike Leigh, I think the magic of his films comes from the everyday realness of the characters and the story. And I think with this film, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, she plays this character Pansy, who is really depressed and really angry, but also incredibly funny. And the way that the film, I think, oscillates between this very dry, dark British humor and this deep emotion and sadness as she's experiencing grief and her relationship with her sister Chantal, who has a very different outlook on life. And I loved seeing the juxtaposition between these two women and how they face the world. I thought that was brilliant and classic Mike Leigh. And we will never be able to praise Marianne Jean-Baptiste's performance enough. I think that what she does here is pretty extraordinary. And it is so funny. I was laughing out loud when she's complaining about why babies have pockets on their onesies or just little lines like that. I think that there's just so much to love about this performance in this movie. And Mike Leigh, his best films for me have that kind of delayed release effect where I leave them and I'm feeling a lot, but I can't really articulate why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling or what is happening really. And then for this one, about an hour later, after I'd stopped at the grocery store and I was on the train, it just all hit me. And I was really incredibly moved by it. So yeah, I highly recommend Hard Truths. This one comes out limited release December 6th.
The whole baby rant, I absolutely loved it. The theater loved it. We were just erupting in laughter. It was perfect. I wrote down so many of those lines. But there is a scene later when she's in a dental office and it's like the dentist touched her the wrong way or the perio probe, you know, it feels like you're sticking her gums and she just jumps out of the chair. And I just understood that doctor's frustration and having to stay calm so well. I was clapping. I was just like, this is exactly how it is. And she maintained her sanity and had to kind of talk her down, meet her at her level. And I was like, I love this so much. So even that little scene, they get so right. Just human relationships in every way, shape, and form. And Mike was there after the film talking about it. And the funniest thing he said was, I hate when directors come out before movie or after movie and explain what you've just seen. So you're kind of stuck with how the movie ends. And I love that he didn't explain it or that you are left to decide what you think happens. So this is a great one. I definitely recommend it when it's out, and it should be out wider in January nationwide and worldwide.
Next, we have The Room Next Door. This was the centerpiece selection of the main slate at the New York Film Festival. This is our Golden Lion winner, directed by Pedro Almodovar, starring Julianne Moore and Tilda Swinton in our lead roles. They play these two characters named Ingrid and Martha. Ingrid is Julianne Moore. She is a novelist who, at the beginning of the film, is very afraid of death and doesn't really want to confront death. And then she learns that her, you know, estranged friend Martha, they were really close earlier in life. She was a war reporter in her career. She actually has cancer. So she goes to visit her. They become closer again, start, you know, going to movies at Ellis Tully Hall. And then Martha asks her if she would accompany her upstate. She bought a euthanasia pill on the black market and plans to take it because her cancer treatments aren't working. And it becomes a classic Almodovar melodrama. So what did you think of The Room Next Door? This is also Pedro Almodovar's first English language feature.
I think all of Almodovar's touches were in this movie, and I really liked them. You know, vibrant colors, especially his reds, his primary colors that he uses to connect people or costumes or locations. And I think both of the women are phenomenal. When are they not? So I wasn't really worried about that. I think I had trouble with possibly the translation and how it's a weird thought, but melodrama plays so much more eloquently or beautifully in Spanish in his films. So I think some of that translation into English felt a bit clunky. Julianne Moore saying, I love fruit. I was like, okay. It just sounded a little weird at times and maybe a bit too on the nose. I think the emotions and the conversations that they have with each other are really intimate, and I loved those moments. And it's a movie about death and friendship and legacy, and comprehending those moments, I think I appreciated more than some of the more literal aspects to it. There's also a character that comes in at the end that I think just completely took me out. But
is it John Turturro's character or the Alessandra Nivola character?
The daughter character.
Oh, okay.
I also didn't quite connect with Turturro's climate speech and all of that. I ended up thinking a lot of May-December in this movie, which I wasn't expecting. I think that would play as a great double to this. But how did you feel about it? Or if you were higher on it, maybe explain some of why that is.
So I really loved The Room Next Door. It's one of my favorites from the festival, for sure. I actually like the dialogue. I've heard that comment, I think, about the dialogue feeling odd or off. And I understand. But for me, it actually made the film better because it just connected, for me at least, with the heightened nature of the story and of melodrama. Like when Ingrid goes to see the trainer and he's just this incredibly hot man, and the way they speak to each other, you just think, okay, this feels like I'm watching a soap opera. I love that. In terms of the fruit too, number one, I would also say I love fruit. I mean, I do. But if I saw the kitchen that Tilda Swinton's character has, it's crazy. The production design, there's fruit everywhere. I've never seen bigger grapes in my life. Those green grapes that they're eating. Like, where did they
the way
get
she
these?
Has to eat them in half also made me
two
laugh.
Bites. Yes. And then any of the flashbacks, I just felt like it felt to me at least like signature mm-hmm. Almodovar. And I love these performances and the way that the film looked. It just reminded me of, I think, some of my favorite European films that are set in America. I also am just a mark for anything about doubles and ghosts and contemplating life and death, especially women contemplating life and death. I thought about The Eternal Daughter, one of my favorite movies from 2 years ago that also starred Tilda Swinton. And once you see the film, you'll understand why. I think it connects with what you were, that little part that took you out that you were mentioning. But I really like how I think in this film, life and death are really intertwined. And he plays with nature and with imagery of nature and with the beautiful colors of that house and of lipstick and of their costumes to really communicate that. And it reminded me a lot of Max Ophüls films and Douglas Sirk films, two of my favorite directors. And I know those two you're not as high on. Like those are in my like tier two of Mount Rushmore. So it might just be a personal taste thing a little bit, but mm-hmm. I really loved Tilda Swinton in particular, but also Julianne Moore. It was wild to realize that they've never worked together before because they had incredible chemistry in the film.
And see, I'm higher on Julianne Moore than Tilda. Again, it's like apples and oranges kind of, but
green grapes and red grapes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Name two fruits, any two fruits. But there are just scenes where she is so convincing, especially at the end when she's in the police station. And I was just like, Julianne, how are you doing this? You're convincing everybody right now. And I loved it.
Yeah. I'm curious with this one's Oscar potential, like what will come of it? It was funny mm-hmm. because I was waiting in line for the bathroom at the end, and the woman in front of me was asking me what I thought about it, and she didn't know I do awards things or anything like that, but she said to me after she told me how she felt, I think they'll both get nominated. And I didn't have the heart to say, I don't really know if that's possible with both of them running in lead or anything like that, but I just said, I really hope so, because they would both deserve it. So
yeah,
I would love that. Sony Pictures Classics can run great campaigns, but you saw a film that you can talk about in a little bit that has another one that I haven't mm-hmm. seen yet, but I'm seeing in 2 weeks. And then The Room Next Door, it has a limited release here in the States December 20th, and then we'll expand after that.
And then next we have Queer. This was picked up by A24, stars Daniel Craig, Drew Starkey, Leslie Manville, Omar Apollo, Jason Schwartzman. Directed by Luca Guadagnino, his second film this year. It premiered at Venice. And to me, this is his most unique film. I don't think we've seen anything quite like it. And I think a lot of that is in the design. It's also, I think, of his movies, one I have to sit with the most. And I'm really excited to see it again, just so I can process certain scenes. I'm curious of also the people who read the novella by William S. Burroughs and how that is adapted, because I think this is a really difficult piece, but hearing him talk about that also is really interesting. It has some incredibly hot moments and some really emotional, drug-induced experiences that he really does, I think, get across using visual effects and lighting and the camera and miniatures. You can talk about that a little bit more in his inspirations with Powell and Pressburger that really jump out. And it's beautiful. I don't think everyone's going to love it, but there was a moment later on when Lee and Eugene are getting to know each other or trying to understand each other. And I just had this epiphany. It was so strange, but I just really dove in headfirst in the moment, and it kind of changed everything for me. So that's also why I want to go back and revisit it, because it does maybe feel oddly paced at times, but I think there's a lot going into each character and how they see each other, like how Lee pines for Eugene in the beginning, and we don't really know how Eugene feels off the bat. So I think there's a lot to work through with this movie, but I did enjoy it in the end. What did you think about Queer?
That's so interesting. So this movie was your own sort of ayahuasca journey, psychedelic moments of revelation.
I'm curious if ayahuasca is going to spike on Google after this movie premieres.
Maybe. I have no desire to participate in that unless Leslie Manville is present, but...
She'll make you do it three times.
Yes, she would. She would. I almost wish that I hadn't seen the still of her in the movie before watching it, because her look still took me out.
Mm-hmm.
But
I hadn't seen her before. And when I did, I said, oh my God, that wig. Oh, I like needed a moment.
Yeah. So anyone listening who hasn't seen the stills from the movie, don't look them up.
Mm-hmm.
Just go in surprised. But yeah, I think that this is the type of film that really can conjure up personal feelings and really complicated feelings within, because it is just such a personal film for Guadagnino. And he's talked about that before too. And I really wish I could see the 3-hour cut, because I think what you're talking about with the pacing of it, it didn't bother me, but there were times when I was watching it where I just thought, ooh, I wonder what was here, mm-hmm. right? And knowing that they had chopped it down twice just made me think, I wonder how this final product would feel if we got, you know, a director's cut of it. I would love to see that. But yeah, I think that this film, it's one, just absolutely stunning to look at, from the production design with the miniatures, like you were talking about. I mean, this is where Guadagnino's love for Powell and Pressburger really shines through. He talked about that a lot with Press for Challengers and being inspired by the Red Shoes. But here we have these stunning miniatures. There's a plane. There is a movie theater with these little seats. And it just reminded me so much of some of the films from the 50s that I love. And you could see that influence. And I think it's so inspiring, really, that he played with the time period when the film was set and thought about filmmaking techniques from that period to put into this film. And his DP, Mukhtapram, who also shot Challengers, some of the best cinematography that you'll see all year. I think that this film, it feels sweaty and erotic in a way that only, I think, Guadagnino understands. And the partnership between the two of them, I think, is one of the year's most exciting. Speaking of great partnerships, Jonathan Anderson, creative director of Loewe, costume designer here, just like on Challengers. I love these costumes. Some of the outfits that Drew Starkey's character in particular wears, mm-hmm. these trousers with skinny belts. He has one sort of polo shirt that he wears that I just loved. The way that glasses are used and different jackets, it's a beautiful use of costume. And and thinking about how costume design can really inform character. So I love all of those details, but the music too. Anytime I see a Luca Guadagnino film, I'm always excited to hear what new wave needle drops he will choose. The New Order song did not disappoint at all. And just opening the film with Sinead O'Connor's cover of All Apologies from Nirvana, I thought was a really, really smart choice. So yeah, I really liked this. And I haven't read Queer either, but I want to, I think, before I watch it again, I think to even maybe get a better understanding of what Burroughs was intending to when he wrote the novel, and then how Guadagnino and Justin Kuritsky's, the screenwriter, played with that.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree about the score. It has this ethereal nature, which adds to some of those moments that I mentioned. The costumes, I really need, I think it's that polo you're talking about. It's got, it's like a meshy look to it.
Yeah.
I need it. And I think that adds to also maybe what you think of Mexico City too, or how they make that city look in the movie. Very unique. And yes, he's just the master of needle drops. And I think hearing the line, "Everyone's a little gay," during the title sequence, we also heard some light chuckles in the crowd, but that is a little bit of what this movie gets into. I cannot wait for the soundtrack to be out and listen to that again.
And Queer will come out November 27th here in the States. It'll have a limited release. We don't have details yet, I don't think, on its expansion, but I think you can expect a rollout into December.
Mm-hmm. So now let's get into movies that one of us saw and the other didn't. I'll talk about a few of mine. I think the biggest one in terms of Oscar potential, one that we heard of from Sundance this year that had really high praise, was A Real Pain. And this was picked up by Searchlight Pictures, will be released on November 1st, written and directed by Jesse Eisenberg, an original story, also starring himself and Kieran Culkin. I think there were a lot of things with this movie that I expected that came true. And I think that's just with who we know Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin to be. Kieran from Succession, I think he's playing a heightened character like he was in that show with some similar aspects. And then Jesse Eisenberg, he plays neurotic really well in a lot of his movies. I kept thinking of The Social Network, but I think he has some of those tendencies here that he brings out and is important to their relationship and them going back to Poland to honor their grandmother who recently passed away. As the movie went on, I think I felt more and more confused of what it was trying to do with talking about death and their being Jewish and experiencing that together. And also because they're on this tour that eventually goes to a concentration camp, but how they deal with the other members in the group and the tour guide and how he kind of runs the group. That character is played by Will Sharp. I got very overwhelmed by the cadence and the comedy, I think, a bit too quickly. And I think ultimately I just wasn't on its wavelength. I left pretty upset with how much I didn't like it. I know we had that question a few weeks ago of this movie's chances kind of running a coda route. And I still think those nominations are possible, but I think it would upset me if that happened and it got those three wins.
More than when Coda actually won them? Like, would it be worse? Because you know for me, that was doomsday. So
it's hard to say because we have movies like Anora that we'll talk about or The Brutalist, similar to The Power of the Dog that year that, you know, we wanted to win. So maybe my answer is yes.
So I texted you and Bennett and said the following. Because after I saw the trailer for this movie, I have not seen it yet. I'm going to see it next week. I thought, this is such a Nick movie. Like, he will love this. And I texted you and Bennett and said, I would have bet money on you loving this movie. So the fact that you didn't was a really big shock to me because I think that a lot of people are talking about it really positively. So whenever I think you end up on the other side of that or I end up on the opposite side of that, it's interesting. So I'm now even more intrigued to see it. This has been one that has just been evading me with scheduling and everything, I ended up not being able to go to a number of the screenings that they scheduled just due to timing, but I'm anxious to see it. I think I can imagine why you feel the way that you feel. So, yeah. But I do wonder about its awards chances still. So I feel like I just need to see it and maybe things will clarify for me a bit then.
I am curious if you will like it and that will be on opposite sides of the spectrum. I'm curious of like you as you're watching it, if you say to yourself like, oh my God, I get why Nick doesn't like this now or something like that. But I think moving on to, I'll just mention two movies briefly that I really, really enjoyed. They're both in my top five for the festival. One of them is Happy End, which is Neo Sora's narrative debut. He directed the Ryuichi Sakamoto documentary from last year, and he's done multiple of those before his father. But I just completely fell into this movie. There are certain cinematographic touches, like shots and lighting choices, connections, and motifs throughout the movie that I really, really loved. I was emotional at the end. It's this coming of age story of these high school students and friends that they're troublemakers, and something happens where they end up putting surveillance cameras around the school, and it's kind of like AI, and the camera can track you, and if you do something wrong in front of the camera, you get dinged points, and eventually like your parents will be notified. So it's just an interesting commentary on surveillance and politics. There's also this Japanese versus Korean dynamic that is very real, and they talk about that racism, and they also use climate change in there too, and this impending once in a century earthquake. And there are just things that they do with the camera that, again, like I had a light bulb moment at the end with something just I feel like they could have easily left out, but the fact that he put that in, it just like put it all together for me and made me so happy. So I recommend this. This isn't like a submission for the International Feature Oscar, but it was definitely a highlight for me. One that I think will be in contention and I have in my top five predictions right now is I'm Still Here, the submission from Brazil. Honestly, I would also put Fernanda Torres in the actress race because her performance is out of this world. It's based on a true story that takes place during Brazil's dictatorship in the 70s and a story that continued through 2014. It's difficult. It's harrowing. It's a slow burn, but picks up and you kind of just feel the intensity building even before anything bad happens. And again, I was very emotional. I'm saying this a lot, but I think her performance glues everything together so well and how she has to protect this family. But I think it's just such an unnerving portrait of political unrest that I think we can understand even here in America, and one that is really necessary. It really worked for me as a film, and I hope that a lot of people see this when this comes out. This will be also released by Sony Pictures Classics, the one you were hinting at earlier. And I know them getting three actress nominees is probably not likely, but they should try for it because they're all deserving.
I'm also seeing I'm Still Here very soon, so I'm looking forward to it, especially based on your glowing praise. And then some of the movies that I saw that you haven't seen yet, so I'll just highlight a couple. The first was The Friend, which premiered at Telluride. I saw this with my whole family. It was a really nice New York Film Festival treat. This stars Naomi Watts and Bill Murray. And in this movie, so Naomi Watts, she learns that her friend, and this isn't a spoiler, it happens literally in the first few minutes of the movie, her friend, who's played by Bill Murray, dies by suicide, and she is stuck with his large Great Dane, Apollo. She lives in a, and this is important context for the movie and for any of our New York listeners, she lives in a rent-controlled West Village apartment that does not allow dogs. So I think the conundrum for us is thinking,
wow,
would you ever give up a mm-hmm. rent-controlled West Village apartment for a dog? That's, yeah, no.
I was going to say.
But never. But this dog is really incredible. I'm being so serious when I say this is a great animal performance. The Great Dane's name is Bing. I flew to him. He was my top celebrity sighting, really, at Telluride and at New York Film Festival. Anytime I would see him, I had to run over and pet him.
Aww.
Because he is just a majestic beauty. But I really liked this movie. I thought it was, I think for anyone who has had a pet who you've really connected with, it will be kind of impossible not to catch feelings for this story and for the relationship between Iris and Apollo. It's also a really nice New York movie, too. It's just an easy, easy watch that I really enjoyed.
Something they talked about at The Room Next Door was that both of these movies were adapted from stories by the same author, and they recommended this as a double. What do you think about that? Because we talked about The Room Next Door.
Yeah, so these are both Sigrid Nunez adaptations, and they honestly have, I can see how they're both adapted from works by the same author. I think that The Room Next Door is superior, I think, in terms of its complexities, but I really enjoy both as New York stories. I think I can absolutely see why they were both chosen and really fit in nicely with the festival program.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And my last one that I saw is an interesting one, because I think it's been on and off a lot of people's lists with awards predictions for months now. And that is Steve McQueen's Blitz. This was the closing night film at the festival. It stars Saoirse Ronan and newcomer Elliot Heffernan. So this is a film that takes place during World War II. And George, who is Elliot Heffernan's character, he's a 9-year-old boy. And basically it tells the story of, at the time during the war, children were evacuated outside of London to the countryside. But George, once he's evacuated, he decides to hop off the train and try to make his way back to London. So it becomes this adventure story in a way. It's a wartime story, yes, but George is also, you know, trying to find his way back home. And Rita, his mom, is also trying to search for him at the same time once she learns that he has escaped the train and no one knows his whereabouts during the war. I was pretty disappointed by this, I have to say. I really like Steve McQueen's other work, I think especially his Small Axe series that came out a few years ago. And I think I expected something where I could feel his presence and really see his touch. And there were times where this felt like it could have been made by anyone. I actually had, this is going to sound like a weird comparison, but I had similar frustrations with this movie that I did with Dune, which is that I just didn't really care about any of the characters, despite the fact that they were telling me in the film that there were clear emotional stakes. And it just kind of felt like we were jumping around a lot from scene to scene, and there wasn't any connective tissue between them. And I think despite having a really stellar crew, there were a lot of elements that just felt wrong to me. Hans Zimmer's score, he and Volker Bertelmann can compete for who can give me the biggest headache with scores this year between Blitz and Conclave, because that was one where it was very abrasive and overbearing. And I don't know, I felt like this could have been made by Sam Mendes, which disappointed me. Like, it gave me that feeling, a similar feeling that I had with Empire of Light a little bit. Like, I see that this is handsomely made, but it feels very generic at the same time. And that was really hard. That was disappointing for me. But I will say that I thought that Saoirse Ronan and Elliot Heffernan were both great. It tries to tackle a lot of issues too, and they end up just feeling like they're tacked on and not like they're thoroughly explored.
It's so interesting because this is Apple's biggest movie, or one that we were expecting it to be. And the mixed reviews are having me think, okay, the Oscars love a wartime movie, but will this happen? And Saoirse Ronan has The Outrun in lead and This in supporting. Like, will either of those happen? And Hans Zimmer having Dune Part 2 and this year, like, will either of those happen? So there are a lot of questions that I have. I haven't seen this, but I'm curious how it will play with voters and the Academy later in the season. Because I think Steve McQueen, I was hoping, you know, maybe this was his chance to come through with director because he deserves one. And yeah, now I'm kind of worried.
So I don't actually know if my comments will have a lot of weight when it comes to awards voting, because the crowd that I saw this with was pretty invested. And they were, you know, cheering and clapping at the end. People were wiping away tears. And it does feel, I think, like one of those up the middle Oscar contenders that we see year after year. World War II is a popular topic with the Academy. Steve McQueen, a celebrated director. He has 12 Years a Slave, but he also has Widows. So, right, you can look at where his films have seen success and where they haven't. And I think that this really is, in terms of topic, aligns more with Academy interest. It also, like I said, has some big names attached to it. Peter Skaberis, who edited it, also did The Power of the Dog. We have Yorick Lasso, who did the cinematography, who has shot a number of Luca Guadagnino's films, also Little Women, High Life. Adam Stockhausen did the production design. Wes Anderson favorite also did 12 Years a Slave. So again, there are a lot of people who are popular with the Academy, Jacqueline Duran, Hans Zimmer. So you can see a world where this does still get a lot of nominations, I think, despite maybe some mixed reviews. But there have also been quite a few positive reviews that I have seen. So I think it'll just be how Apple can push it, because if it is their only contender and they do decide to put a lot of weight behind it, I think that it could be successful still. Steve McQueen also wanted to premiere it at the London Film Festival because this is a film for and about Londoners. So I think that makes sense too of why it skipped those earlier festivals and just did BFI London and New York. So I don't know, this could be one of those that still does well with the industry.
Well, we'll see next month. This will have a limited release in the US and the UK on November 1st, and then streaming on Apple TV Plus on November 22nd. I'm curious also, because it will be streaming, how voters will feel about that. But I think let's get into my favorite movie from the New York Film Festival. This was my number one, Anora. You were singing its praises from Telluride, and I was really excited for this. I was just completely wowed by it and can't wait to talk about it. So for those that don't know the description of the movie, Anora, a young sex worker from Brooklyn, gets her chance at a Cinderella story when she meets and impulsively marries the son of an oligarch. Once the news reaches Russia, her fairy tale is threatened as the parents set out for New York to get the marriage annulled. This is directed by Sean Baker and stars Mikey Madison as Anora. There's a great supporting cast as well. This is, again, in theaters, day of release. So highly recommend going to see it. They're showing it in 35 millimeter in multiple cinemas around the country. I know you mentioned on the pod before that you have trouble with Sean Baker in the past. What surprised you, or what did you really like about Anora?
Yeah, I think with some of Sean Baker's other movies, I was always a bit dubious of his fascination with sex workers and with people living in poverty. I wasn't sure what to make of his perspective on that experience. And it's something that all of his films focus on. But I think that, you know, a movie like Red Rocket or The Florida Project, while there were great performances within them, there was something, I think, keeping me from really clicking in and loving those movies, despite, I think, seeing their merits on the surface, at least. So I think Anora, I went in with the perfect level of expectation, really, which was just, like I said before, I was a little bit cynical, thinking, okay, a Sean Baker movie won the Palme d'Or. I haven't really seen anything from him previously that would make me expect that to happen, but okay. I'll go into this. I'm excited. I'll, you know, see how it goes. I really enjoy Mikey Madison. And I just really loved it. I think that the tone of the movie is really perfect, and how it really straddles social realism and that commentary with a screwball comedy. And we haven't had a screwball comedy, like a true one, I feel like, in a while. And I feel like she, Mikey Madison as Honora, fits the construction of a screwball comedy heroine so well. I love those characters. Like if we think of Irene Dunne in The Awful Truth or Katharine Hepburn in Bringing Up Baby, those performances, right, are so different, obviously, from what Mikey Madison is doing here. But those are those early examples that I really love of being able to, I think, be a little bit feisty and really play with maybe any preconceived notions or ideas that you might have about this character. And I just really loved how this movie made me feel. It has that sour and sweet quality that I love in so many films, especially films from the 70s. And yeah, I saw it again with you at New York Film Festival and loved it even more, really, than when I first saw it. I think there's even more to appreciate on rewatch, and knowing what's coming, I think, really changes your perspective also on how you experience the first section of the film, which is that Cinderella feeling. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I loved it. But that's great. It was your favorite of the festival.
Yeah, it was really high on a few. But I think this inched out The Brutalist in the end. I think my thing with Sean Baker is that they're slice of life, and that is sometimes hard for me. It's funny because I really love Tangerine, and Bennett and I would always text each other, "Merry Christmas Eve, bitch," which is a famous early line from that movie. So I liked him then. I wasn't maybe as high on the Florida Project and Red Rocket, even though some of those performances were incredible. But Honora is just completely different. It's a roller coaster of an experience. I think Mikey Madison gets the accent perfect and the experience of Brighton Beach and that area. And there's just so much comedy in there too with her and her coworkers. The first 90 minutes is just go, go, go. And it wasn't overwhelming. It was exhilarating to be on this experience of figuring out who she is and seeing her at work, and some of the music choices in that and the editing, which is done by Sean Baker also. I think he should get nominated for this. It just really worked. It's so much fun. And then when it flips and they get married and we find out that the parents come, it's a totally different experience. It's not that it slows down because you're still on this wild chase, but you're with different characters. And I think that just changes the movie a little bit. But even through that, Mikey just keeps stepping up. And I loved her more and more. We get some really great close-ups of her, and she just never backs down. And I think that's what really held the movie together for me. And even through the ending, the final shot and sequences leading up to that are really important. And I just think since I saw this movie, I cannot stop thinking about it. Neon has been doing an incredible job with its rollout and having a pop-up this week. I'm like, oh my God, I have to go get some merch. And I just...
At HQ, her club.
Yes. I'm just like, I cannot wait. I keep telling everybody to go see this. I think it's going to be such a fun group movie, like groups of friends going to see this. I'm interested in seeing what voters think of this. Like, is this too provocative for the Academy? But I'm hoping in the end that it's not, and that it's going to be well received.
Yeah, it's one of those where I really think that we will probably hear a lot of that sentiment, mostly coming from other people who cover the Oscars, around like, will this be too much for them? Will they think it's tawdry or something? And we hear that with certain movies every year. And then when push comes to shove, that's not what voters think. Mm-hmm. Like two movies that I like far less than this one, Everything Everywhere All at Once and Poor Things, those both had similar chatter around them before voting. And then look what happened with those. So yeah, I think we can just wait and see. But right now, everyone seems to be really enjoying this, and the comments have mostly been positive. And I really like to, with Madison's performance, like at the beginning when we're watching her in the club And she's just, you know, taking these men around, trying to get them to go to the ATM, or she's eating food out of her Tupperware in the back. She's just so funny. And we really, I think, get to understand that she's really good at her job, number one. Mm-hmm. But two, this is hard work. And it's understanding, like, that this would be really tiresome. And you would want to, you know, find a way out, find a way into something else. So it makes then her relationship with Yvonne feel, you know, like she has hit it big. Like she's with this son of a billionaire oligarch. But then, you know, it's, I think what Baker does really brilliantly with the script and what Mark Edelstein, who plays Yvonne, what he does so well too, is that in the beginning, his immaturity connected to his wealth is very funny. Mm-hmm. It's played for straight laughs, but there are little traces of, you know, maybe how he responds to service workers or how he treats the maid in his home or the way that he talks about money that make you realize like he's from a completely different world. And again, he's very, very immature. And those things are going to come out in more painful, realistic ways as the script unfolds. So I think it's just really masterful in how it plays with tone, because every choice that's made in the script, I think, is the right one, but it's always unpredictable and unexpected, which is so exciting when you're watching a movie, you know, as it unfolds, thinking, I don't know where this is going, where you might think you have an idea and then it just zigs and zags in other directions. I think that that was for me what made it a really fun watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something that's both untouchable but understandable at the same time about the setting of it, the script, everything that fits together nicely, that has this push and pull as you're watching it, that I think just melts together really well. There are so many great lines, and I'm not going to ruin any of it, even though they're great. There's a scene in a church. There is even a little mention of a Disney honeymoon, which made me think of the Florida Project and that ending. Mm-hmm. Sort of like that little Baker connection there. But yeah, I think this movie will have gifts that are really popular and just be all over social media once it's out. So yeah, I can't wait. I will definitely be seeing this again multiple times.
And just quickly again on the supporting cast, Yura Borisov, who plays Igor, he's my favorite, I think, in the supporting cast. And I would love for a magical Oscar nomination surprise. Listeners, you might know him from Compartment Number 6, but I really, I think, just love the contrast of his performance with Mikey Madison's take on Annie or Honora. There's a calmness to his character and a completely different energy, especially in scenes that are very heightened, very brash, very emotional. He has this steady presence that I love. So just want to shout him out as well. And there's a great little reference to Young Frankenstein, which we covered earlier this year when she's making fun of his name.
So I mentioned editing and briefly mentioned director possibilities there. How do you feel about its Oscar potential in other categories?
I think this has a lot of Oscar potential, and I'm not going to doubt it until people stop voting for it or stop praising it. I think then maybe I'll say, okay, it might be too much. But until then, I think we should ride the wave and see where it takes us, because we know what Neon can do with a Palme d'Or winner. And I think for me right now, this has a chance at picture, director, original screenplay, editing, actress for Mikey Madison. There are quite a few places where I think it can get in and really even be win competitive. I think original screenplay is the big one for me, and then actress. But best actress is so competitive this year. I think we might get, you know, it's rare that we get five nominees that I really like. I think the last time that happened was 1974, but it could happen again this year.
I totally agree. In a funny way, with Barbie having come out last year, would be a great double with that. And if it won, would just be such an interesting commentary. But I definitely will be supporting it in many categories, even with other ceremonies. I think it could hold up throughout, you know, have it show up at the Globes, have it show up at the Spirit Awards, even critic circles, seeing if Mikey wins there or, you know, has some wins across the board. I think that will help its support for sure.
I think she's a major contender for the Critics' Best Actress prizes. I think I will not be surprised if I see that. And her even, I mean, she's not really a newcomer, but mm-hmm. I can see her scooping up some of those along the way too.
Yeah.
So if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I think I have to go with Mikey Madison for Best Actress. Part of me wants to give it Best Picture. I know that's a rare feat here. I also gave that last week during week one to The Brutalist. And I'm like, oh, geez, I don't want to pick. But Mikey Madison gives the performance of the year. She's incredible to watch. And I think just knowing her through different projects, like from Scream, a horror movie, and here she is being hilarious. She's just shown us so much range. And I love what she does in this movie and where she leaves us in this incredible character arc. So yeah, my Oscar goes to Mikey Madison. What about you?
Oh, it's hard because I'm also thinking about directing or writing for Sean Baker. Mm-hmm. I think especially for the very chaotic scene in the middle of the film with all of the furniture breaking mm-hmm. and the injuries that happen. But you know, I also think about that scene and I think about how at the Q&A I went to, she was just sitting there very humble and Sean Baker just said, and Mikey did all her own stunts. Then when you know that, when you watch that scene, even more credit to her for that performance. And I think I have to go with Mikey Madison too for actress. I think that this performance is one of my favorites of the year. And the more you watch it, I think the more you see its layers. And I read a really good review of the movie in The New Yorker by Justin Chang. And he said, which I thought was really beautiful, I'll quote it. He said, Annie isn't dumb, and Madison, whose sad eyes often tell a story her smile doesn't, betrays a silent awareness that something here is too good to be true. And I feel like that's the perfect way to look at her performance. It's a very physical performance where she's convincing you of one thing at another time, but then what she does with her eyes and how she communicates her emotions, I think tells a different story. And that's a really tricky tightrope to walk. But yeah, go see Anora. It's out in theaters now. And let us know what you think.
And then just to wrap up, New York Film Festival week two, the 62nd edition. If you could give any of the movies you saw during week two one Oscar, what would it be?
It's hard because I do want to pick another actress again. That's just the theme, I think, of our show and mm-hmm. just how we talk about the Oscars. But I'm going to do something a bit more creative and out of the box just for this. And I'm going to say costume design to Jonathan Anderson for Queer, because I love these costumes, what they say about the characters, Mexico City at the time. They are just so beautiful. And I think it's impossible not to watch this movie and want to wear everything. And I love menswear and suiting, and I think it just like is taken to the next level here, and you can see his Loewe fingerprints all over it. So I'm gonna go costume design for Queer. What about you?
Well, I guess I'm just gonna be boring then and give it to another actress. I'm gonna go with Fernanda Torres in I'm Still Here, which is very interesting, and we'll see if this plays out. But Walter Salles got Fernanda Montenegro nominated for Central Station in 1998. So I'm curious if he can follow that up here. But she's incredible and holds everything in her face. And you just see the pain that she's going through, even though she's always holding it together for her kids. And that is so hard to watch, but she's just incredible. And I think it was just really surprising because I didn't know what to expect from this at first, but creates an unforgettable experience of a movie.
I love that pick too. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we're getting right into spooky season. We love talking about horror movies on the show, and we've really talked about quite a few horror movies that have been nominated at the Oscars. We're running out, but we do still have a big one to talk about. Winner of Best Original Score, nominated for, I think, the scariest song to ever be nominated in Best Original Song. We will be talking about The Omen from 1976, starring Gregory Peck and Lee Remick. This was one that terrified me as a child, so I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, this will be great. I haven't seen this either in a really long time or ever. So
ever.
We'll see. I can't remember.
Okay, this will be good then.
But thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. You can find bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde and updated nomination predictions at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.